Welcome to JW Community Podcast, where my mum is basically just blabbering on about nonsense.
Thank you, fam.
Hello and welcome to another JW Community Podcast. I'm really excited about this one because I've literally just edited a podcast about Canada and I've got some more Canadadians on, so I'm quite excited. But first, I've got a co-host who's been on before, and that's Nick French. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hi, Louise. Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you. Yep.
You noticed that you've been promoted from guest to co-host without being consulted.
I noticed that, but do I get paid any extra?
How many peanuts can you eat in an average handful?
Probably about 12, so that'll be fine.
I can manage 12. Okay.
Good.
Well, just be glad that you've got a superior title.
Thanks very much. I've now started to feel like I'm part of a cult.
Yeah. Are you saying that when I had you as a guest, I was sort of grooming you for co-hostdom?
That's right. And now I tick all the boxes, I can now be a co-host.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, I'm going to introduce our guests, and you're going to have to correct me, guys, if I say your names wrong. But we have the cutest couple in XJW land. It's Christian and Katja. Tell me how to pronounce your surname, please.
It's Gutierrez.
Gutierrez, right. Definitely got it wrong.
How are you?
How are you, Christian?
I'm okay. I just finished having some lunch here. We were just watching some funny videos and, having a good
day. And how are you, Katja?
I'm doing really good, thank you. Just, I'm happy because today we have blue sky. Yesterday it was snowing. And we're just tired of the snow, so today's a little bit warmer.
God, well, if you're going to live in Canada, that's what you get, isn't it? Anyway, I should have introduced you properly and said the couple that we have on today were the Valentine's edition of Apostate Monthly and have also been in Avery Haines's recent documentary on W5. It is Christian and Katja, but I've introduced you now, so we missed the boat.
I have one thing to say.
Yes, please.
Hello. My name is Christian, and stand up for Jehovah.
Christian, are you trying to muscle in on my...
he loves to reenact that part a lot.
My USP, it's the only thing I've got, and you've taken it from me. So, can I ask you, to begin with, just to tell us about your journey as Jehovah's Witnesses and your journey out, because you've come out as a couple and you're quite young, aren't you? How did all that happen?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but basically we were both born in, right, to the organization, and we met each other when we were Jehovah's Witnesses, and we started dating, and we were both pioneers, and Christian, he was a ministerial servant, and we, 100% believed in it, right? Like, what do you say? Oh, yeah. We had no doubts.
I was massively brainwashed.
Yeah, we were super brainwashed. We just believed it because our parents believed it, and we trusted our parents, so you know how that works.
I'm always kind of surprised when people say they had some doubts. I had zero doubts.
Yeah, like, sometimes we would question certain doctrine, but we would just assume that we weren't spiritual enough to understand it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah. We were the problem, but as far as the organization, we thought it was true. So we weren't planning on leaving, but happily we did. In 2013, was it? That's when we started having doubts.
Yeah.
So we were both pioneering then, and we were actually doing a lot. Like, we were doing a lot for the organization, and so we were kind of starting to burn out, I guess, but... do you want to explain how that happened? How did we start researching? Because we weren't looking to research. How did that happen?
I was on Instagram, and I just saw some things that were kind of funny, seemed kind of strange. But I put it in the back of my mind because I thought there was just a better explanation for it. And I remember telling Katya how I felt about it, and she thought it was strange too. And you know, the funny thing is, every time from that point on, every time I discovered something that just made the organization look fishy, I thought that Satan was attacking me, and so I tried to strengthen my faith. And what I would do is I would go on JW.org and I'd download all of their Kingdom Melodies. And at work, I was just blasting it. I was just listening to all the songs
loud. Yeah, trying to make myself more spiritual.
Yeah.
Like, wash it out.
Yeah.
Gosh. What did you... So, when you were on Instagram, did you have to type some... my son Instagrams, but I don't. So, did you have to type in something that... Like a search engine thing?
We weren't specifically searching for anything. I think it just showed up in, like, the community feed.
Oh, okay.
And another Jehovah's Witness or someone had posted it, and we just saw it.
Yeah. It was on the Jehovah's Witness Instagram page.
And then that showed up. It kind of, like, recommended it. Or something.
Right.
I mean, something weird with the governing body, and he just kind of thought it was kind of strange. It was a photo, and with a younger sister, and we just thought it was strange. It wasn't that woke us up. It was just those little things that just started to kind of make us, for the first time ever, even question it. And so then, anyways, we kind of just went on with our life, and then we went on a trip to Denmark because that's where I'm from originally, and I have family and everything. So we went on a trip to Denmark. And while we were in Denmark, there was an announcement in our congregation here back in Canada. But we missed the announcement because we were on vacation. And so I asked my grandfather in Denmark, because he's a Jehovah's Witness, can you tell me what the announcement was, maybe? And he's like, oh, no, you have to wait until you get back to Canada. You have to, like, follow, you know, a protocol, and you have to listen to your own congregation, which is weird. But anyway, so we were kind of, I guess Christian was a little bit impatient.
Yeah.
So... he decided to just Google what was the latest announcement, hoping that maybe a Jehovah's Witness leaked it somewhere. And he found the announcement on online somewhere. And then he was like, oh, so he found the announcement was like the Silver Sword Bible?
It was about the loans for the Kingdom Halls. They changed it.
Yeah. So we found that out, but at the same, because I think it was like, yeah, we found that online, but at the same time that we found that out, we found out other stuff about the organization.
Yeah, because, so we never went on the internet to look for Jehovah's Witness stuff. It was just straight to the JW Library or JW.org, and so when you see people say certain comments like, you know, Jehovah's Witness Watchtower was associated with the UN or, you know, things like that, I was just... That was the first time I ever saw something like that, and I instantly I thought it was just a lie. Someone's just, these apostates are just silly. They're just trying to hurt us.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of just ignored it.
But curiosity made me want to go on the internet to just Google that part, and then it took me to Wikipedia, and then I saw that, and then I wanted to see the references to see if it was actually true, which took me to the website, one of the UN's websites.
Wow.
And they're frequently asked questions, and yeah, it was true, and I was just shocked. I was just...
Yeah, because for Jehovah's Witness, that was a huge deal. United Nations is like a big...
deal. It's the wild beast. It's
right.
You're in bed with the wild beast. It's a massive deal.
Yeah. So for us to see that Jehovah's Witnesses were involved, it was kind of like they were on Team Satan, right? So we're like, what?
And you know how many boring Friday nights we were at the book study, just studying the apocalypse book. It was just always just, you know, the UN, how evil it is, and we did that for years.
And like they criticize other religions for being a part of it, right? Like the Catholic Church, and then they're the truth because they wouldn't, you know, mix with these organizations. And then we found out that they were mixed with them, and we're like, what? And at first, we wanted to just believe it was a lie, because that's what we're taught to believe, anything from apostates or lies. But then when we did our research, we realized it wasn't a lie, it was true. And that was one of the first things that really started to get, like, things moving. Like, we started, if that was true, then what else was, you know? So we started doing a little bit more research on other things, and then we found out, like, there was false prophecies, Armageddon dates, and then we found out the sexual abuse problems, and then we found out the scriptural changes, and all these things that we had no idea the organization was behind. It just started to, like, come all out of, like, nowhere. And we spent, like, three months doing nothing after work but coming onto our bed on our phone and researching everything. every YouTube video, every website, every single thing out there. And yeah, we woke up. It was Christian who woke up first, right? Because he came to me initially with all these things. But eventually we both woke up, and our elders were kind of getting concerned because we weren't going to meetings while we were researching, because we were freaked out. So we just stopped going. Yeah, and Christian had public talks to give because he was an MS, and our elders are texting us like, where are you guys? Are you guys, like, at first they were concerned, like, are you guys okay? Like, and we didn't want to say anything because we knew from enough research that we've done, we knew that once you start speaking out, you get in trouble. So we were like, oh no. So we didn't want to tell them anything, and so we kept ignoring the phone calls, or we just say we're sick or whatever. But eventually Christian, he mentioned a bit of his doubts to his oldest brother, because we thought that, you know, it's family, you can talk to family at least, about his doubts. And unfortunately his brother, because he was a new elder, I guess he was wanting to be a elder, he, after he hung up the phone with us, he contacted like one of our elders, and our elders called us within like 10 minutes and being like, we hear that you're talking about apostate things. And that's when it all, like, within I think 3 weeks of that phone call, we were disfellowshipped for apostasy. So it happened really quick, actually, once the elders found out.
Yeah, the main question was, do you still believe in the governing body?
And we said that we have doubts. Those were our exact words, that we have doubts. And they gave us a judicial hearing, and there you go.
Wow. That is a hell of a story.
And we had just been, we were involved in the RBC, like the Kingdom Hall construction work, literally a week or two before we started waking up. And all of that we did to help, and then they just kick us out for having doubts.
Well, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, really, you've been deprogramming yourself for a few months. Was there any time at that point that you felt like a relief that you suddenly realized it was all wrong? Or was it just far too quick?
At first, it was like, I would say it was the worst day of our life. And we realized it wasn't true.
Definitely the worst
day. We felt so, like, alone, so angry, so confused, scared. Like, we just didn't understand. And a part of us were sad because we really wanted to be in the new system. Like, you know what I mean? So we were like, what? Yep. I'm not going to live forever. And it was just really, it was scary and sad. But once we realized that we had been, like, lied to, and once we realized that we knew what reality was, we were relieved though, because we're like, wow, like we got out. We were lied to, and yet we found out so soon. So we were actually pretty relieved, because as much as we liked being a Jehovah's Witness because we thought it was the right thing to do, we were actually relieved because we had been giving it our all and we were burning out. And we were doing so much for the organization. And so when we found out that it wasn't true, it was kind of like, wow, we don't have to do all this anymore. Like, we don't have to go and, I don't know. Yeah. It was kind of a relief, actually.
The last meeting we went to was an assembly. And after that, you know, they skipped the Wednesday meeting because we already had that at the assembly. And then so our following meeting was supposed to be on Sunday. And you know, Kay and I, we had discussed it. We talked about it. We skipped service that Saturday. And we were so extremely confused. But at the same time, you know, that voice was just telling us, this is false. This is, you know, once you know it's not real, you can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
So on Sunday morning, you know, we got changed, and I grudgingly was getting changed because I didn't want to go to a meeting anymore. And Kate was pushing for us to go to the meeting. So we got in the car, we were driving out. And I guess she just saw in my face, I did not want to go to the meeting.
Yeah, like, we can't go to the meeting with us looking like this.
Yeah, and then she pulled over to the parking lot, you know, in this business area, and she just said, okay, Christian, are we going to go to the meeting or not? Like, are we going to be Jehovah's Witnesses still, or are we not going to be Jehovah's Witnesses?
And we pulled over, we put our legs on the dashboard,
we were just so confused at the same time, just trying to figure out,
what the heck?
How is this a business? How does this?
Are we sure we're not being lied to, right, by the apostates? Like, are we 100% sure, right?
And that was, you know, that I say that part where Katya turned the wheel and turned to the parking lot, that was the turning point.
Yeah, if we had gone to the meeting still, I don't know. Like, it's good we didn't go back.
And we went home, and we slowly, you know, just got into our normal clothes, and it was just a really tough time that day and the following days, just because I think we then just sat on our phones and just trying to figure out the typical JW mentality thing, you know, well, if this isn't the truth, well, then what is?
And we're researching other, like, organizations around the world.
And we'd think, oh, look at this, the Bible Dawn students are international Bible students, and we thought that, oh, this must be it.
Maybe they're the better version of them, or whatever.
And
we kept seeing problems with those religions, too, and we're like, no.
And the freaky thing is, I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but we almost got into a, kind of like a controlling religious situation shortly after we finally left.
Yeah, because there was like a support group here where we live, for like ex-cult people of all different denominations, and we went to it because we needed some, like, help and, like, you know, community, and they ended up being, like, another controlling group in themselves where, like, they help people, but then they expect you to go to their group and never leave their group.
Yeah.
So we almost joined this one, and we got out of that one really quick. We're like, oh, this sounds the same.
I remember telling Teddy, I'm like, this is starting to feel like the Jehovah's Witness all over again. We have to go to these, we have to do this, we have to be quiet. Let the person, like, talk and then question us after he's taught us. I'm like, I really don't like this.
Yeah, we just felt like red flags. We're like, okay, goodbye.
Yeah.
We actually still get emails from this group to this day. We told them we don't care. This is 4 years ago.
And I have no idea how to block
it. I know. We only went to this guy's group for like 2 months, and yet he still emails us, next week is the potluck. We're like, we're not coming.
Hey, they might try and disfellowship you as well. Don't go to a judicial committee with them, will you? What I find really fascinating about your story is, A, you went from like 100 miles an hour to like a screeching halt where you started obsessively researching. Now, I obsessively researched. I did that same process where you can't stop looking once you start looking. But I did it about 5 years after I left because I was so frightened of looking at something. But what's incredible, because you're quite young, you are the internet generation, and it's brilliant that you were just looking up a Jehovah's Witness announcement, and that's what started you looking. Because obviously all the other hits come up, so you weren't researching apostate stuff, but it came up anyway. And I honestly think the internet is going to be the death of the witnesses, because you can't stop young people going online, and one way or the other, information, as you say, comes up. It comes up on Instagram, it recommends other things. I always get recommended like wedding dresses and fat people's things on Facebook. I have no idea why.
That's so funny.
But it does sort of, it tracks what you look at, doesn't it? And then it...
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think for us too, because I think for us, because we were honestly sincere Jehovah's Witnesses, like, we really believed it, we really tried our best and everything. Like, when I was a teenager, I'd confess to the elders, like, a good Jehovah's Witness if I went to a bad party, like, all these things, right? So we really were a good Jehovah's Witness. That I think that also was what made us, when we started figuring things out, we wanted to research, because we wanted to be sincere. We were never really the hypocritical type. Like, if it's either true or it's not, I'm not going to pretend. Like, I wanted to be sincere. I wanted to know what's real. So I think that's what gave us the courage to also research, maybe, because we're just that type of person, maybe. I don't know.
And I think it was easier for me, personally, because I've always been kind of like a borderline Jehovah's Witness, and I've always been rebellious in the congregation.
No, that was me. He's never been in trouble with anyone.
You have been. Times I was disfellowshipped.
Oh, no. He likes to think he was rebellious, but that was me. I was the one who went in service on Saturday and went to a party the next night. Like,
oh, I'm shocked. Oh, yeah, shocked.
I was a normal teenager, right?
Right. The other thing that interests me is the fact that I genuinely believed it as well, and you said you were like genuine witnesses. You're obviously truth seekers, and that's what prompted the research. But the backdrop of all this is that you were both abused. And yet it wasn't until you started researching that you said, like, the abuse issue came up, and yet you must have been aware of that.
For me, I had been abused as a kid and everything, and I I honestly thought I was like the only one in the entire organization. I thought that it can't happen because Jehovah's people are good people and blah, blah, blah. So the person who molested me, they were Jehovah's Witness, but I just assumed that they were like the random person that just didn't follow guidelines. Right, so I never knew there was actually a problem with the organization until we started doing research and we started watching things, and we're like, oh my gosh, like there's tons of people like us. Like there's a huge issue in the organization with sexual abuse.
But so, did you both know that each other were abusees?
Yeah, actually, when I was trying to date Christian, I actually told him like on our second date. It's like I had been through it. I don't know if that's like normal now, and I think about it. Probably things you don't want to say on your first date, but okay. I had been through, like, I had another boyfriend before that, and I had some other friends of mine that I just felt like I couldn't really be myself with, and I was like, you know what, whoever's going to be my friend or my boyfriend one day, they're going to have to like me for who I am, so I was just, like, testing the waters, and, like, the next guy who asks me out, I'm going to say everything about me, and I guess he still wants to date me, so, and then Christian, he did mention something happened as a child, but he didn't really go into detail until, like, our third year of marriage. It really took a lot for him to talk about it. So, yeah, but we did know. We really felt like, comfortable with each other. So,
does that not illustrate the fact that because things weren't handled the way that they should be handled, that you didn't know how to then speak to somebody about what you've been through? Because you hadn't had any counselling, you hadn't actually had the authorities with Christian, the authorities to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to know at what stage you tell somebody what you've been through.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Yeah, I think that's why it was harder for Christian too, right? Because the only time he had ever spoken up to it about it, he got in trouble for speaking up. So it was probably just don't ever talk about it kind of thing for him, right? And like for me, like I did talk about it a little bit more with my mother and things growing up. So I had talked about it before. So maybe that's why I wasn't as nervous to say it. But yeah, it's still nonetheless like you feel like a little bit guilty for saying it at the same time because the person who abused you was a witness. So you don't want to talk too bad about them at the same time. Right? You have to forgive them and look at them the way Jehovah looked at them. Right? So you say your story, but you don't say it to slander them either, or slander the organization, right?
So how did you get involved with the W5 documentary?
Awesome. The reporter, Avery Haynes, she contacted me through email when she was still working for CTV. I believe it was Global News? CityTV. CityTV. About the lawsuit. And at that time, I wanted to remain anonymous. My pseudonym name was XJW. And, but then, we kind of felt that if this goes more forward, if it becomes more public, then other people may be more inclined to want to, tell their stories. Leave it up to them if they want to, you know. And then after she, went on to work for, CTV's W5, and, that's when she wanted to do this, documentary on, Jehovah's Witnesses, which is really nice because, you know, usually they do two episodes in an hour, and a whole hour on Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, so they really gave us a platform.
It really was an incredible documentary. I watched it at 5 o'clock this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I better do my homework. And it's such a good documentary.
Yeah, I really like that they did a good job. I mean, of course, there's so many other things we can talk about in it, but you only have 45 minutes, right? But I think with the time that we had, I think that they really did give a good overview of the problems within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they mentioned blood transfusions, and then they mentioned shunning, control, so it wasn't just the sexual abuse, even though that was the highlight of it.
And it was almost left, they left it on a cliffhanger because they said at the end about the fact that they've got charity status and they brought in $75 million tax-free. It's almost like, all right, well, we need to know more about that.
Yeah, exactly. And I like how at the end they used Trisha on one of the very last clips, and she said that we're not going to be quiet anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of like, in other words, like, this is not the last time you're going to hear from us.
Yes, and Trisha is one of the people that I've interviewed on a podcast that's just gone up. It hasn't just gone up, it's going up tomorrow, but it'll have gone up by the time this goes out.
Yeah.
So Trisha's interviewed, and a Canadian barrister as well, who's part of the class action. So we don't need to talk about the class action because that's actually covered in a general way by the barrister, and there's some interesting information there. Did you enjoy, I mean, oh God, that's a stupid question, isn't it? You can't enjoy doing a documentary like that, but was it interesting?
No, we really did. Yeah, it was very fascinating. One, just to see the process of how a documentary like that is made. Like, it was just a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of equipment. But I do think it was a really good experience because we got to have our voices heard, and we felt like we felt privilege that we got to be a part of something that was going to help make a difference and potentially help future victims and future children from not being hurt, right? Because hopefully things can be done with the policy. But, I mean, it was at the same time a bit draining. I mean, we would talk to some other people that were in the W5 documentary, and like you didn't feel drained during it, to be honest. But, like, after it aired and after you had told your story and watched it and everything, you're like, wow, that was a lot. Like, that was very, like... Yeah, for the past week, it's been a little, like, you could suffer from a bit of anxiety or flashback from it, right? So
a bit shell-shocked, I should imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not only that, but you also, you're doing it knowing you're going to lose family.
Yeah, like, your family is going to be even more upset with you because you're speaking out about, you know, like, you just know that there's so much good that's going to come from it, but on a personal level, there's going to be a little bit more repercussion, but, so it's a little bit, you know? There's always a little bit of a consequence for doing what's right, I guess.
You've paid a personal high price in order to protect future children that you don't even know. I think that's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
For that, I mean, you really are owed a massive thanks from everybody in the XJW community.
Oh, no problem. Avery Haynes, the director, interviewer. She was really nice. Like, the entire process, she was very caring, and yeah.
They were incredibly thorough as well, didn't they? I didn't realise that she'd been to London and interviewed Kathleen Hallisey, and I knew that there were reporters at the Warwick protest. I didn't realise that this was going to be the culmination of it.
Yeah, she did travel quite a bit for it.
Yeah, it was really thorough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
So it really was a brilliant documentary. It's something that's going to be used for years to come, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Can I maybe now ask something, because you're talking about losing family and things like that. How soon after you were disfellowshipped did you start becoming activists?
That was actually about a year after we disfellowshipped.
We took a whole year off.
Because I do know, like, sometimes my mother, she's like to use, well, the reason why we don't talk to you is because you make these videos. And I like to remind her that you were shunning me for a whole year before we even made one video.
Yeah.
Right? They like to use the videos now as the reason. But we actually didn't speak out or anything for a whole year, and we had no contact with our family. And that is actually why people do speak up eventually, because we're being shunned. If nobody was being shunned, if there was none of these horrible policies, there would be no reason for any of us to be talking about it, right? So
yeah.
It made it worse, maybe, the videos, made it a little bit more, you know, tense non-relationships, but we already had no contact. It's not what caused, we lost our family because we didn't want to be Jehovah's Witnesses anymore. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, you've got nothing left to lose. Like, once they're shunning you, once the worst has happened, then...
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a freedom, isn't it? I remember when I stopped being a witness and thought, well, God's going to destroy me now. And at that point, I felt euphoric because I thought, well, I'm dead now. It's brilliant. I can do what I want.
Yeah.
I felt this bizarre sense of freedom that I'd never felt before, because it's like once you've got literally nothing left to lose, then
crack
Why
on.
Not?
Yeah, happy days.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Like, you're like, okay, and that's also, like, some people ask us, do you wish you had been, like, a fader or something so you could have maintained your relationship with your family? And that's one thing that's kind of a tricky one because I don't want to be shunned by my family. Like, it kills me all the time. But I still think I would have preferred to be in the situation I am right now, being this fellowship or resigning, because I don't want to have to fake who I am. Like, I like that we can put a Christmas tree up and not care if someone, the wrong person sees. Or, you know what I mean? Like, even though it sucks to be shunned and we don't want to be, I prefer to be disfellowshipped for the reason I can just be myself. Like, I don't want to have to fake it anymore.
Yeah.
So,
I totally agree with that. It gives you a sense of freedom. I think, I often think that about people who are still using aliases. And I do agree if you can preserve a relationship with your family, that's nice and good and valuable. But I do think it leaves you really vulnerable because you've got something to lose and you're terrified of losing it. While ever you've got something to lose, you're living in fear of losing that thing. And sometimes, like, there's another interview that's gone up before this one of the group of 20 Jehovah's Witnesses that all left the same congregation together at the same time. They actually left because they were found out, not because they elected to leave, and they were terrified at the time. But she said, it was the best thing that happened because now they're all free and they can, do what they want, live their lives openly. Whereas before they were living this half-life where they were sort of going a little bit but not really going and trying to hide all the doubts, and it there's a lot of fear and anxiety that you carry with that.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people that are still fading, they've been successfully fading for the past couple of years, but they say that they always are scared of posting something on Instagram, or like when they're out in public they look over their shoulder, make sure no one sees them with the wrong person. Like, I just, that's so much more stress. Like, it's, I don't know. I couldn't do it for me.
I know. It's probably like having an affair, but sort of the other way, having an affair with Satan, maybe.
Yeah, basically. Well, that's what my mom actually said in an email. I said, can we just meet for tea? That's it, just tea. We'll have to talk about anything. She's like, honey. She's like, because she says that she loves me, but, she loves Jehovah more, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, if I were to just go for tea with you, I would be having spiritual adultery on Jehovah. I'm sorry. So you have an affair with Jehovah by hanging out with your daughter? What?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
it's so sad.
I know.
There was always one, I don't know if anyone's ever spoken about this, but there was always one Watchtower article that maybe it was just strange to me, but, and I'm not sure if I'm translating it properly in English, but because we were in the Spanish, but there was this one, it was about how to be closer to Jehovah, and so it goes something along the lines of, you have to, in order to be close, you have to have intimacy with Jehovah, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that properly.
It is, that's the right word.
But I was kind of like, what the heck?
Kind of pervy,
yeah,
I don't know.
So strange.
Yeah, I mean, like, intimacy is what you say in a romantic relationship. So I was just a little, okay.
I was like, all right.
Well. Intimacy with God, I'm not sure. That sounds normal.
How have you guys been able to maintain such a positive outlook? Because you are a very upbeat, happy, happy couple, which is, you don't seem as angry as I would be if I had to live your life.
Yeah, honestly, we do have our days. Like, there's days where I just start crying or I'm angry. Like, I mean, we're just normal humans. But I think I think we're just kind of a humorous couple. We find humor inappropriately all the time. So I think that sometimes, like, the best thing to do, even when I talk about my hard childhood with people, sometimes I catch myself laughing. And it's not because I think it's funny, but I'm just like, what else are you supposed to do? Cry all day about it? Like, find something funny about it, because that's the only way to get through something hard is to almost make fun of it. Do you know what I mean?
Powerful, laughing at things.
I guess.
I think I'm more of the type that I find myself always in these situations. I believe I'm the one who tends to just, I usually say, okay, come here, and I give a big hug and a big boring story about, how things are going to get better, and you know, look at these things we're looking forward to. Look at our nice goals we're heading towards. Look at the ones we've already reached. And I tend to constantly just daydream about
what are the possibilities.
You know, they're just sunny days.
Yeah, I would say Christian's more, I'm more pessimistic and Christian's more optimistic, but I think maybe it balances out, so.
And the thing is just because, like, I truly believe in it. I truly believe that days are going to get better, and, you know, I just remind myself and us the things that we have, and, you know, just when you think that you have it bad, others have it way worse. And it doesn't minimize. You're not supposed to minimize someone's feelings on certain things, you know. And you're supposed to let them grieve through the whole thing. Because if you skip that process, you're never gonna
just bottling it in.
Yeah, you're never gonna get past it. You're never gonna get through it fully. But I do like to I don't know how to explain it. Just look forward to the good days. And, you know, we don't have a whole lot of people here. We're only just starting to talk to others, at work and things like that about, this whole Jehovah's Witness thing. But it's, I don't know, it's...
Yeah, I don't know exactly why. I think it's just, you know, you can choose to either sit and just think about negativity or just do something to distract yourself. You know, laughing at a movie or hanging out with someone. Like, you're never fully going to be okay with being shunned. I don't believe that can ever go away. I don't think someone's going to say, one day you'll feel better. I don't believe that's true. But I think that you can learn to cope with it, and I think you can learn to rebuild your life. Like, I believe what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I always say that because I don't think that the shunning will get easier, but you become stronger. And so you will just ways to rebuild your life. And, yeah, I just, yeah.
Hey, loads of people must have seen you, though, in that documentary now. Have co-workers and things started, have they seen it?
Yeah, actually, it's a little bit funny because we have, you know, we do cleaning for a living. And so when we text them the day before we go to clean their house, and we say, hey, we're going to come clean your house tomorrow. And then they'll reply back like, okay, cool, by the way, we saw you on W5. And they're like, oh, ha-ha. Well, there's that story. And they always tell us, like, how shocked they were, and they didn't know, but how admirable we are, and, like, how, like, we think that we're living, like, a better life now. And so it's nice, and it's just good. It gets out there. Like, people that maybe didn't know much about it are finding out, so I think that's good.
Yeah, and I would say, based on the messages that we've gotten on Facebook and Instagram, there are so many non-Jehovah's Witnesses, never before been Jehovah's Witnesses, and they are just absolutely disgusted with this organization.
Mm-hmm.
They are upset with this whole policy, and they're very disgusted by how parents will, in the end, choose an organization over their children who decide not to be Jehovah's Witnesses. And a lot of them are talking about how it's so similar to Scientology because of the whole shunning thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought that it was just some strange religion, boring people who come annoy you at your door, and this just opens so many people's eyes to how this organization really is.
Yeah, we have clients that, like, they say they go to church and they believe in God, but they're like, but their family still comes first. They're like, they would never shun their child. Like, this one couple is like, I think they go to some church here in Calgary, they're Christian, and they're like, you know, we love God and then we're religious, but at the end of the day, we would never shun our child if they didn't want to go to our church anymore. Like, they were like, that's not, like, for them, that's just not even an option. So I think it's interesting to see that people, even people like that, still wouldn't put their child second, right? So I think people are just shocked at how far Jehovah's Witnesses take their beliefs.
I was speaking to a lady yesterday who was abused when she was four for several years by by more than one a Jehovah's Witness. Mm-hmm. Then they moved country, and in the new country that congregation they went to, she was abused again. And she said that she spoke to her father a couple of years ago, who is very old now, but all there in his head. And she said to him, "Did you know that I was, you know, being abused in this congregation and then when we moved in that one?" And he said, she said, I quote his words, he said, "My hands were tied."
Oh, he knew? How can you know that your own child from the age of 4 is being raped? And your answer is, "My hands were tied."
Oh my gosh.
I know that I know that witnesses are brainwashed, but I still think you're still a human being.
Yeah, there has to be something that clicks in your brain. Something, like, as a parent, something should click. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you?
But even if he's not going to go to the elders or go to the police, wouldn't he at least try to take the kid away from whoever? Never letting that kid be alone ever again or something? Like, that's just bizarre.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought. Is he honestly telling me there was nothing he could do to protect his child? So, yeah. I think I've come across co-workers that have just been, like, utterly shocked. Because they go, "But they're really nice people." And you go, "Oh, yeah, I know they are nice people." But not, you know, my argument is Hitler was nice to the Mitford sisters, wasn't he? He was an epicure and he was an artist and he was charming. And the Mitford sisters thought he was lovely, but... it's not, you know, nice is not the final argument on something, is it? It's your actions. It's what you do.
I agree. Oh, that's crazy.
Wow. You know what I wanted to ask you as well? So I've been talking to a Canadian activist, and she was saying, "Oh, what we need here is maybe off the back of this amazing documentary is to try and galvanise our MPs to do something." And you know, you already have mandatory reporting in Canada, which is what Australia is getting off the back of the Royal Commission, and I suppose what we're hoping for in the United Kingdom off the back of the ICSA inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be working for Jehovah's Witnesses, can it?
No.
What do you think the problem is there? Because you do have the law, I can forward you the legislation, and there are penalties for non-reporters. What is the issue? Are they just plain breaking the law? Or is it that we don't know that they're not reporting? Because then I suppose it needs the victim, the abusee, later on to report, to find out that the elders haven't reported.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm not exactly sure. I don't feel like people are reporting, because I just know my case here, and... for me, the only reason why I went to the police is because I didn't go to the elders. I was in the hands of normal people, right? Because when my elders found out that I had gone to the police, their immediate reaction wasn't anything to do with, "Am I okay?" It was like, why would you do that? This person is in our congregation. This person is in the newspaper. They were in the newspaper. All these things, like, they're going to see it was a Jehovah's Witness. Like, so I don't think that they don't report. They only maybe report if someone were to admit it, right? But I know quite a few people here in Canada that have been, you know, sexually abused, and none of them ever reported it. Like, they're the elders. Who knew?
So is it the Canadian's elders that do that thing of going to a phone box and making an anonymous report? Is that a standard kind of thing, or do we not really know?
I've never heard of that.
Okay, I've heard of it, but I don't know where I've heard it from.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard that where somebody has been in it might be America, where somebody's in a state that requires mandatory reporting, and I'm sure it's only anecdotal, but I've heard that an elder would go to a phone box so they can't phone back and make an anonymous report, so they've satisfied the law, but no law enforcement person would take that seriously because there's no way of checking. It's just a random report, so it wouldn't really get taken seriously.
I've never heard of that. That might be the state. I've never heard of that.
Right.
Hmm.
I think your problem then in Canada is that you have the law for mandatory reporting, and it sounds like the Jehovah's Witnesses are breaking that law. And maybe what we need to do is get leverage on Parliament to enforce the law that you already have and start getting some prosecutions. Because if elders were prosecuted personally, and the Watchtower would back right off, wouldn't they? They wouldn't take responsibility for saying don't report. they'd make sure that the individual elders were personally liable. It might, you know, if we could get some elders that we knew had had a judicial committee after mandatory reporting had been enacted and had not reported,
mm-hmm.
there's a penalty there. Maybe it's an issue of proof. Maybe it's difficult to prove.
Unless maybe they're using their clergy confidentiality clause to say that.
Is that in the Canadian legislation though? I'm not convinced that there is a clergy confidentiality clause in Canadian legislation.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I've got the legislation. I need to read it. Is what I need to do and find out. But I don't think, because I'm working with a chap called Tom Parry who heads up an organisation in the UK called Mandate Now, and he has drafted legislation, and there is no clergy exception. It covers all regulated activities, and that includes any religious services. And I asked him about this Canada issue, and he said they're already covered. They've got the legislation, and he sent me it. And he never said there was clergy confidentiality in there. It's an interesting one, because in terms of legislation, you're ahead of other countries on this, but it's still not biting. So we need to find what the sticking point is to leverage it.
Yeah.
Very good.
Just a question. Could you do like a Canadian or American accent?
No. I can only do a Pakistani accent. Every accent you ask me to do sounds like a Pakistani accent. And I'm not going to do it because people will think I'm stupid. Well, people think I'm stupid anyway.
Kaya, she thinks she can do a really good Scottish accent.
I want to do it right now, though.
Oh, yeah, go on, do it.
That's depression. It's going to sound like, I don't know, Indian or something.
I've heard Nick can do a good Scottish accent, but I think he's got a head start on the rest of
I sound more English than Scottish, despite being born here. That's the trouble.
What is the main difference between a Scottish accent and a British? Because I have a friend who's from Scotland as well, but she speaks with a British accent. So I don't. Why does that happen?
I can understand what the Scots say, but I can rarely understand what the English are saying.
No.
No, I'm just kidding there.
I can barely understand either.
Krishna had an idea was happening this whole time.
Has Katya been translating this entire interview to you?
Yeah.
Didn't realise it's been bilingual and we just didn't know.
I think for me, like, hearing European accents are easy for me because I have family that are from Europe, so I've always, when they speak English, they always have a strong Danish accent. So I'm just used to it. I don't find it hard to understand.
Well, that's the thing about the Europeans. The people like the Danish and that, they speak better English than the English speak English.
That's actually true. I've been in Canada like 99% of my life, and I still get words wrong in English. I don't know.
But we always use the excuse that she's not.
Yeah, like whenever I suck at spelling, I'm like, but I'm not from here. And Christian's like, you came here when you're three. I'm like, yeah, but still, I'm from here.
So I'm not from here.
It's true. Technically.
So, Christian, when I asked you what we could talk about, you said that you had some funny stories.
Oh no.
We don't have any funny stories.
What would you like to hear? Funny, serious, sad?
I think we need to know funny now. We've done serious.
Funny? Okay. It depends on what your version of funny is. Let's see here. Would you like us to talk about Sister Bottomley?
Yeah.
How about Sister Kitchen?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sister Kitchen.
How about you tell the story?
I don't know.
There's a sister. Well, we call it that, right? It's actually, but she was an older lady in my hall when I was a child, and she was quite overweight, right? I feel bad now as an adult, but as a child I thought it was funny because I guess she had some kind of a gastrointestinal issue with her intestines, and it was kind of funny because her name was Sister Kitchen, so we just assumed that she ate a lot of food in the kitchen, and she would have issues. And she would always, like, during the meeting, like, she'd often just randomly get up and, like, look side to side and really, like, concerned. And she would, like, run as fast as she could to the back where the washroom was. And she would, like, go into the bathroom, but you could literally hear her, like, using the washroom from, like, the auditorium because she was so loud. And the kids would always, like, plug their nose. It was so bad.
Aw, she should have been called Sister Bathroom.
I know, right? But she also joked that she really liked cookies and things, because so that's why we're like, oh, Sister Kitchen, she ate too many cookies, and now she's in the bathroom. Rest in peace.
Have you had any guys wake up from your congregation and, like, contact you afterwards and go...
Not from the Spanish Hall yet. Has there?
Yeah, they're actually... They're,
well, like a different district maybe, but...
Yeah. In our circuit, there is at least three people who are... they're awake, but they have to still keep going to the meetings.
Yeah.
But it's really neat to be able to talk to them because we talk about the things... that everyone else knows, but they can't say it because, you know, that would be murmuring or whatever you call it.
Yeah. Murmuring, but, that's such a good sin, isn't it?
Yeah, we know these elders and we know these other people and so on. And it's just, it's kind of like the things that, is mentioned, kind of like almost like a mafia control. There's nothing that they can do wrong. You know, they have a very good control on who gets so-called privileges and who gets have these assignments. And, yeah, I always found it interesting, you know, the time when the circuit overseer was coming. And I call it family promotion day. Whoever was on stage, you know, in charge of the theocratic ministry school, he would make sure that his... sons or daughters, you know, that they had the A, B, and C assignments. Whoever was in charge of the announcements, he would make sure that his family did the presentation of the magazines. And it was just, that's why I call it Family Promotion Day, because they always chose their family to make them look good before the circuit overseer. That's how it was in our hall.
It's very nepotistic, isn't it? I mean, it's not, they don't even try to hide it, I don't think.
No.
What was it that made you decide to do videos for your activism?
A couple of things. Like, I think one, we just felt like we couldn't fully explain ourselves to our families and stuff because we were being shunned. So it was kind of like, if they were ever, I don't know, like we felt like that was the only way we kind of communicate, if they would ever watch, like how we felt on things or what was, why we woke up.
Yeah.
And like we have little nieces and nephews and I have half sisters that are children. Maybe one day they would question why we left and they could watch them. So, you know, kind of just hoping to help in that way. But I think also, we woke up a lot from other people's YouTube videos. Like, I know Mark and Flora really helped us when we were waking up their videos. And I think we just realized that if it wasn't for other apostates, you know, information and giving support, we wouldn't maybe have woken up the way we did, and so we kind of wanted to give back. We're like, we felt really grateful, so we wanted to say, like, let's try to help other people wake up.
You know, we do know for a fact that our families do watch the videos.
Yeah, maybe not every single one, but a large portion, maybe.
Yeah, and they are indeed spying on us on social media because, you know, for example, on Instagram, if someone likes your picture, you'll get a notification, and I saw, I saw my sister liked it, and this was long after we were disfellowshipped, and then when I went back to go see it, it was unliked. You know,
oh shit!
Yeah, or we have family that they request to follow us, you know, like my brother Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, they requested to follow us, and oftentimes they just want to see what we're up to. They don't want to communicate with us because they're not allowed to, but they just want to see how far we've gone into the world.
Because his brother's like a really like active elder, and they're super, super in it. So like if they were actually waking up, I feel like they would message us. Like there's ways to do that, and they would actually reach out when we reach out. But I think it's just there's been a lot of snooping, like just curious of what we're up to and things like that. Just to see how bad we've gotten or whatever. But you never know, like, in the future that might make them more curious and make them wake up. But
maybe it was to see if they should invite you to the memorial.
Maybe. Huh? We haven't actually gotten one invitation from any family members to go to the memorial for years.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah.
That is harsh.
Such a hard life.
I've got an invitation for you, though, but you've already had it. I've said, would you please come over to the protest? And you've already said, well, we would if we could.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to come by. That's in August, right?
August, yeah. And it's over two weekends as well because the London convention is split into two halves and they use the same venue over two weekends. So hopefully we will, every Jehovah's Witness in London will have to walk past an apostate this summer, which I quite like the idea of.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's the 11th and 12th of August, and then the 17th and 18th of August. But one of the things I really want to hit is I believe there are children and women as well in that are still attending that will be either being emotionally, physically or sexually abused. And I just want a big poster that says, phone the police, not the elders, if you're being abused. Because I want people to know that they can go to the police. Oh, and Nick, you've got an amazing poster, haven't you?
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, I love yours. You put two up, but the second one I just thought was inspired.
Uh-huh. It says, Bethel knows the paedophiles in your hall. Do you?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one because growing up, there were multiple pedophiles in our congregation, and we did not know. And the parents obviously did not know either because one of them had quite the history of abusing multiple minors and eventually became an elder. And this person was so beloved in the congregation, and parents would allow their children to sit with them during the meeting because, you know, the children would learn, you know, be more spiritual growing up. Where they were allowed to go in service with them, and it's amazing that the elders did know, and yet they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Again, you think as a human being, how could you not think that? How could it just not be an automatic reflex to think, oh God, I better tell, even if you did it on the quiet.
Yeah.
Better just let so-and-so know to keep that kid away from that paedophile.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many crazy stories. I mean, this one pedophile that I'm talking about, there's a picture that was posted recently, and you can see there's these three girls, and they're playing with these eggs. You know that game, holding an egg on a spoon and you're trying to walk across? Yeah, they're playing that game and he's right behind them just staring at them.
They're like 10 years old or younger.
And it's just a freaky-ass person.
Yeah. And the organization, by not reporting, is making children sitting ducks.
Yeah.
It's turning them into sitting ducks, ready victims for people, and they only have to, all they have to, you know, it's such a simple thing. It would be such a simple thing.
Yeah.
To protect children.
And yeah. This other, and then there's this other one, pedophile number two. This is a bit of a long story, but so he crossed into the United States with his family illegally. And in the States, he had more children. He has one, two, three. He has five children, all daughters. And he abused the oldest one, and it's believed that he also abused most of the other ones. And then he was going to be in trouble by the police. And so what happened was him and his family left there, and then they came to Canada. They left their oldest daughter, the one who was complaining about it. They left her behind, and she was, I don't even think she was even an adult yet. I think she was just 16. And, they left her behind. The family came here, and it's just a shame that the elders did not notify, others about this pedophile and his family coming over here, because it would then happen again that he would then abuse another minor.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
It did happen. And it happened about a year ago, and this person contacted us.
He molested his granddaughter.
And it's kind of like, why do people not, you know?
Yeah.
It's simple protocols, simple rules, just
yeah,
notifications, and everyone would be okay, and yet...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not a difficult thing to do. And in the documentary, the W5 documentary, they put that amazing clip of when Angus Stewart says to the one of the elders, Bowditch, I think, Bowditch goes, what are we supposed to do, try and protect every child in Australia?
Yeah.
And Angus just goes, well, you could report to the relevant authorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not... He made it sound like, oh, this is impossible. You're expecting us to protect all the children. No. I'm just expecting you to report.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if a pedophile, a non-JW pedophile were to abuse your child, you'd go instantly to the police. If it's a JW pedophile, if for some reason, you know... To contact Bethel, you have to see what they say. It's a case.
And it's ironic because they always say, we're going to call the police on apostates who come into the camp hall. We're going to call the police on you right now. But it's like, they don't, that apostates are not the risk to the congregation. You know what I mean? Like, they're so quick to make sure that they get out of there.
But yeah, that's such a good point.
But one of the person who's saying that they're going to call the police on you, they might themselves be a pedophile. But
yeah,
was it on them?
Yeah, because they showed the ladies that went into the Kingdom Hall and spoke out of turn. I'm not going to use the C word because I don't think it's appropriate. I hate calling it a crash because nothing gets bumped into and nothing gets knocked over and nothing gets broken. And I don't think crash is an appropriate word for it because it makes people think that people are aggressive and shouting and they're not.
Yeah.
They're walking in to a public place. Yes, they're speaking out of turn, which feels awkward and antisocial. And then their public invitation is revoked and they leave. But it was really interesting that the documentary showed that. And they said, oh, you know, we're not sort of promoting this, but it is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do, they go, oh, we'll phone the police straight away, don't they? We'll phone the police.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm speaking when you want to speak. You're going to phone the police on me.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your take on the sort of the whole protest issue? I know it's caused a lot of division among people, hasn't it, about what people think about it. Obviously, I'm planning one, so I've pinned my colours to the mast.
I mean, like, I honestly, like, some Jehovah's Witnesses who, you know, see protests, they'll probably just maybe get more brainwashed only because they're taught to believe the persecution thing. But I still think it's better to do it than not to do it, because there will always be someone who does wake up from it. Like, someone who's curious enough or someone who wants to listen, right? Like, personally, me, I'm actually for the protests. I think they're good. And if it's not, even not just for the Jehovah's Witnesses, I think that it's bringing awareness to the community. And I think it also just gives us ex-JWs who might have been silenced for so long, it gives us a chance to just speak and say how you feel on things. You know what I mean? So I think it's, as long as no one's actually hurting anyone physically, I don't think it's a problem.
Or breaking any laws.
Yeah.
For me personally, I'm a bit different with on this one, in the sense that I personally wouldn't do the Kingdom Hall crashes.
No, I personally wouldn't.
But I do love watching the videos, and it's just so funny. But at the same time, you know, I do believe that it will make some people believe that they're being persecuted, but at the same time, if you make a video on YouTube in a nice way, they'll still think they're being persecuted. And it may help more, but this one thing I do believe is that I'm not against it for the reason being that you have people who have been silenced for so long, felt that they're, you know, that they had no power, they had no ability to, yeah, no voice. And even if this doesn't help anybody wake up, I guarantee you it will make them definitely heal a lot better because they're just, they're getting that, you know, they're getting their voice back. They're proving to themselves, you know, these elders don't have power over me. They're, you know, I have the strength to speak up now, and yeah, so that's why I don't criticize anyone who chooses to do that. And I mean, me personally, I don't do that. I wouldn't do that. But yeah, to each their own. I
think there's all different forms of activism, and I think every form will help someone who responds to that type of activism. So some people don't. I mean, there's some people who probably don't even own a computer, and they're just not like that type of person, and they will never see a YouTube video. But then there's people who will be seeing at a protest, right? So I think everyone wakes up in different ways, and someone might get reached in that form, and, you know, I don't know.
I really want to see Zeb just jump into the bathroom pool.
Yeah, like with a stink bomb too, or like a blue, with the whole pool red or something, like that'd be funny. Like, it looks like he had a shark attack.
You guys have just got a whole lot more radical than I thought you were ever going to be.
No, but we told Zeb about his idea. He's like, I'll do it. I'm like, oh, no. What did we start?
I totally agree with you. I think it needs people to be able to do things that I wouldn't dare do.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the strength in numbers, isn't it? There's things I wouldn't dare do that other people would do. And I just think just because I don't want to do it doesn't mean to say nobody should do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you think about it, the people that were in the Kingdom Hall are so different and from such different personalities that when they leave, they've all got their own individual personalities actually coming through. So what works for one person doesn't work for another, but works for somebody else. And so everybody's got their own kind of take on what's going to work and what's not.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I've found speaking to people at work is that nobody in the world, if I can use that term, bats an eyelid at the idea of a protest. Protesting is what people do normally who need to speak out about things, and it's not seen as a violent or aggressive thing. It's just a bunch of people generally walking down a street or stood on a street corner or stood outside a building with some placards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And protesting is pretty much enshrined in people's rights in this country, and it's only, I think, because we've got so anxious about not offending witnesses and not scaring them and not feeding into their fear agenda and their persecution agenda. But actually, as Christian says, anything you do makes them feel persecuted. Me cracking a joke makes them feel persecuted.
Yeah.
So you're never going to avoid that persecution agenda anyway, because that's a phobia that's been deliberately instilled in them. So anything is persecution.
Yeah. And you know what? Can I just say this as well? I find it very intriguing. You know, when we were Jehovah's Witnesses, we went door to door and we tried to speak to people. Most of the time, the majority of the time, they weren't interested. I don't know how it was in the UK.
Nobody was interested.
Yeah, like nobody. I mean, like nobody, right?
Yeah,
but
literally.
You know, now when we speak to, we call them normal people.
Yeah, right.
Try not to call them worldly. We just say normal people. And we tell them a little about you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses. They have a lot of time to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they actually are interested. They'll bring up a story about they knew someone who is a Jehovah's Witness or something, or they didn't know about this or that. But I just find it interesting when you're a Jehovah's Witness and you go to them all dressed up. They're not interested in your sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
They know what you're going for. They know they feel like you're there to convert them, as to, you know, being just a sincere neighbor, just to go talk to them. Now, when we go speak to them, they actually are interested in listening to what you have to say.
And well, funny, I, you should, say that because a couple of years ago in the UK, we did protest in London in Parliament Square, and we're handing out leaflets, and my placements that month were absolutely through the roof.
How many hours did you do?
Also, there are quite a few people who've never been Jehovah's Witnesses, normal people, as you like to call them, who are interested in coming to the protest.
Oh.
And I find that fascinating as well.
That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah. So, Nick, have you got any final questions that you want to ask Christian and Katja?
Well, my final question, I suppose, would be, now that you're not part of Jehovah's Witnesses, what sort of hobbies have you got?
Well, we're still learning all of them because, I mean, we've only been out for 4 years, but I mean, I'm obsessed with fashion, so.
Yeah.
I loved it even as a witness, but I always felt guilty because it was too flashy or too much, you know, it's not, the meetings is not a runway, as they would always say. It's not a fashion show, right? So I always felt guilty. I always get in trouble. So now I can express what I like to wear or whatever. So I'm obsessed with that, so. I like to make jewelry and clothes, but we also really like to travel. We want to see more of the world.
Brilliant.
And, just making more friends, like, relationships are really important to us. And, yeah, we like to have kids one day, but, just kind of just want to do with whatever we can do now that we're not sure what it's like. We love holidays. Christmas is a huge favorite of ours. We had our Christmas trip for like 5.5 months this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I'd say you sound like normal people then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep saying it. When it comes to hobbies, I think I'm coming close to the point where I'm coming close to accepting I most likely won't be able to be a pilot, which is something that I know that'll be my number one regret when I die. Because it's something that I always wanted to do since childhood, but the circuit overseer pulled me aside and said that's not something to do, so I
couldn't. He dropped out.
I
he
couldn't
started.
Finish it. Yeah.
Oh no.
But I have this affinity for cameras. I love cameras. I love boats as well, and we are kind of hoping to be able to do something. Absolutely beyond insane.
Well, that's how we do things. We actually eloped to get married too, so we've never done anything normal.
We've never done, but we are hoping to do something where our lease is going to end in exactly 5 months from now.
Like our apartment where we live.
And if everything goes according to plan, everything goes well, we're hoping to go buy a boat, live on a boat, sail around the world, and just blog,
and, like, vlog it.
Vlog about it.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we run out of money.
I went on a course once, and the girl that ran the course, it was how to teach profoundly disabled children. And the girl that ran the course, her parents had done that and had her, and she had lived her early childhood on this boat for several years and missed out on schooling. But it didn't matter. She was educated in a different way. I mean, she was highly educated.
Yeah.
But basically, her USP was, because her parents were so creative and wacky and bonkers, she said, I can make anything out of chicken wire. For some reason, her parents had, built a boat out of chicken wire and lined it with something. And that, this is what this course that I went on was basically making things out of chicken wire. So, yeah, do it. That sounds amazing.
We have one life. We're still young enough to do these kind of crazy things.
Yeah.
We don't have kids yet, so you know what? Why not? And we're kind of tired of, at least where we live, it's a very business-type city. We have a lot of corporate-type work. It's not a very creative or nature-type city. And so we just want to, stop just paying bills and just, I don't know, we want to go live a little bit. I know that sounds selfish, but we didn't have childhoods. We all know that.
So if you do happen to come over for the protests, given that you like cameras, you can be the official photographer. I need a photographer.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time. I'm really glad that we managed to catch up, because I know that you had said that you would be interviewed a while ago, and I've been really looking forward to this. Thank you for your time. I'm really grateful.
No problem. It was really nice to be a part of the podcast.
Oh, Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Right then, Nick. Well, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, Nick.
Bye, Nick.
We really like hearing from you again. We miss you guys.
Oh, yeah. Just so you know, we're working on your video.
Oh, excellent. Great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, we were just working on it this morning.
Oh, good.
Looking good. Oh, and we also have the little Scottish ornaments you gave us. We have them around our house.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, it's great to see you, and I really look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, and Louise, would you consider yourself a subject of the Queen?
Well, I know the Queen owns all the swans, and I am as beautiful as a swan, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I know some people want to, and some people are against being subject to the Queen.
I like the Queen. Yeah. I'm not a royalist, but I do like the Queen, Her Madge. I've got a lot of respect for her.
Yeah, over here in Canada, a lot of people, they really like... What's that couple, the one that just got married? Prince Harry, Prince Henry, Prince...
He's not got married yet, has he?
No, he's about to.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, we're going to throw a street party. We have street parties in my close when anybody royal does anything cool. It's just an excuse to get trestle tables and teapots out and bunting. But last time, the last royal wedding, we had a big street party in the close.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, and I have to say, the British do make some super good food.
Mark made us the best tea. Us Canadians, we really like our tea, they have a really good there.
Super good burgers.
Oh, okay.
Fish and chips. I think I'm going to go eat it.
Oh, hey, well, look, when you get on your boat, bob in at Southampton. Dock at Southampton, and we'll all come down and have a tea party for you.
Actually, we're actually thinking of buying our boat in London, or in England, so, because that's where they're cheapest in Europe, so.
Yeah, there's just
a
selection there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let us know when you come over and we'll come and help you pick a boat.
That sounds nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'd be delighted to hear that.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, all three listeners, for listening to another JW Community Podcast.
Thanks for listening. Jack and Diane, two American kids growing up in the heartland. Jackie gonna be a football star. Diane's debutante backseat of Jackie's car. Sucking on chili dog, outside taste freeze. Diane sitting on Jackie's lap, got his hands between the knees. Jackie say, hey Diane, let's run off behind the shady trees. Dribble off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please. Say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. Say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone, the walk on. Jackie sits back, flexes his thoughts for the moment, scratches his head and does his best James Dean. Well, then there, Diane, gotta run off to city. Diane says, baby, you ain't missing nothing. Jackie say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. Oh yeah, I say life goes on, long after the
heaven is gone. So let it rock, let it roll, let the Bible belt come and save my soul. Hold on to 16 as long as you can. Changes come around real soon, make us women. Kids doing best they can.